getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning, the 11th of June, 2016. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleague, Ezra Ginsberg, Richard Pollock, away from the program on this fine Saturday. You can reach us here in studio at Illegal Curve. That's how you find us on Twitter. That's the best way to talk to us. Like what you hear, let us know. Don't like what you hear? Well, probably keep that to yourself. Facebook.com/Illegal Curve and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. I say good morning to my colleague Ezra. You're looking resplendent in a bright orange shirt, I must say. Ready to hit the links afterwards?
Yep, we're going to hit up Bell Acres after the show.
You're getting into the groove for the Illegal Curve Pro-Am coming up next month?
Absolutely, and you know, we have to start off the show, and we're obviously going to be dedicating the show to the memory of Gordie Howe.
Absolutely.
And we have some Jets news to talk about, and we're going to talk about Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Finals, but it was obviously really sad news. I was telling people, yourself included, I don't cry very often.
No.
But when that news came out about Gordie Howe, I'm not ashamed to admit, I was crying. It was very sad. I mean, you're talking about the face of hockey in Canada and around the world, so it's very sad news. They did a great job on Hustler and Lawless and The Big Show yesterday.
Yeah.
They had a lot of great guests on talking about Gordie Howe, and we're going to have Al Strachan on later in the show to talk about Gordie Howe. So it's very sad news. So we definitely are going to have to talk a lot about Gordie and the legacy that he left.
Absolutely. His legacy it can't be summed up in the course of a three-hour program. That would be, it's just there's not enough words, not enough time to talk about the impact of Gordie Howe on the hockey world. Before, we're going to hear from Wayne Gretzky coming up momentarily. But before we do that, you had an opportunity to spend a little bit of time when you were a young Ezzy. You had the opportunity to meet Mr. Hockey at Max Bell Arena. Why don't you tell the audience the story of your introduction to Mr. Hockey?
Yeah, Drew, I tweeted out the picture yesterday. I've tweeted it out before. The story is, not a very long story.
Sure.
But for me, it was
a seminal moment of your youth?
Yes, and I was 8 years old at the time, and I went with my sister, who was 2 years older than me, and my father, of course. He drove us down to Max Bell Arena. The University of Manitoba Bisons were playing, and Gordie Howe was signing autographs. And I knew who Gordie Howe was because my dad told me that he was the greatest hockey player of all time, and I had his hockey cards and everything like that. But just meeting Gordie Howe, and it was for maybe 20 seconds, 30 seconds, just getting his autograph. But I remember shaking his hand, and his hand basically just enveloped my hand. And it was unbelievable just to meet someone like him. And I don't even really remember.
There's certain people you meet and there's a presence and you feel it in the room. He had that presence.
Oh, absolutely. And there were a long line of people that were getting his autograph. And I was going to say, I don't even really remember what he said to me. It was probably, just like, what's your name, kid, or something like that.
Yeah. You were shell-shocked a little.
Well, I remember it's the picture that I have that means the most to me, because it's, not only is it me, it's my sister and I were little, and it was just an amazing time to meet him. And, there are so many stories that people have of meeting Gordie Howe. And there were so many great pieces written yesterday about Gordie Howe. Gary Lawless had a good piece for TSN.ca.
Calling him Popeye on ice, if I'm not mistaken, which is is a fairly apt description, I must say. I mean, and what you hear most about Gordie Howe, I mean, the litany of records and honors and tributes and all-star games and Stanley Cups and Art Rosses and Hart trophies and everything else. I mean, you almost glaze over when you hear them so much because you can't fully appreciate it. But then it's the stories you hear about players, about how, he was such a mean SOB on the ice, but he was such a gentleman off the ice, and how he was able, you know, he had that switch that where, you know, when he was, you know, when it was go time, when the game mattered, when the, when, you know, when, you know, it was time for him to be a different persona, he was that different persona. But as soon as the game ended, you know, somebody, you know, who's had their nose bashed in by Gordie Howe is happy then to go have a beer with him afterwards. Or he's such a gentleman off the ice, and he was such an ambassador for hockey. I mean, I don't know. There was, in, like you said, in the litany of tributes, somebody yesterday said, you know, there is no Mr. Baseball, despite there was a movie of that name, but that's a separate issue altogether. There is no Mr. Football. There is no Mr. You know, Mr. Soccer. There's greats in all those sports. There's no Mr. Basketball. There's greats in all those sports, but there is only one Mr. Hockey. And just the fact he was able to earn that name and hold on to it, and everybody was like, yeah, that's the nickname for him, tells you really all you need to know about the legacy and the impact of Gordie Howe.
Right. It was how good of a person he was. And you hear countless stories about how he would sign autographs for hours and the way he touched people's lives. But you mentioned it, Drew. He is Mr. Hockey. There will only ever be one Mr. Hockey, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you're talking about Gordie Howe, there will never be someone who did what he did. And it's not just the scoring records. It's the longevity. You're never going to see someone play with their sons again at the Professional Hockey League level. I am confident in saying that. And you're never going to see someone play hockey in six different decades.
Yeah.
And finish top five in scoring
and be
for decades.
And be effective.
Yes.
I mean, take away the last one where he played the shift for the Detroit Vipers, and, you know, that is a publicity stunt. That's the, whatever. You can take that and leave that. It doesn't bother me. But, like, when he was in his 50s and he was playing for the Whalers, I mean, he wasn't just a scrub. He was effective.
And his first 100-point season was when he was 40 years old.
It's incredible. I mean, you know, I'm 30, when I'll be 35, and it hurts to get out of bed. And he's going out there and he's playing against kids who are half his age, and putting up points and putting up numbers and being effective and being valuable. I mean, he is a once-in-a-lifetime athlete.
Absolutely. He's a once-in-a-lifetime athlete. He transcends hockey. I mean, I was thinking, you know, just everything that he's accomplished in his career and the type of legacy that he's left, he's really Mr. Canada.
Sure.
That's really what he is. And, you know, such a humble person as well. And for someone who was the greatest hockey player until Wayne Gretzky came along.
And Gretzky himself would still say that Gordie Howe is the greatest hockey player of all time. Now, that's, you know, part of Gretzky's humble, Gretzky being humble and Gretzky being respectful is to say that, of course. I mean, but the fact that, you know, these guys, there's a legitimate argument to be made. I mean, what Gordie Howe was all about it was just remarkable.
But that's really what Gordie Howe was all about, and that's why he left such a lasting legacy, because he was tough on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
He'd score goals. He'd elbow you in the corners if you dared to go up against him. But he was classy off the ice. He was humble. He's all of the qualities that I think Canadians want to see in a good person.
Not just Canadians. I think it's what people want to see. Somebody who is a tremendous performer, somebody who is a tremendous competitor, somebody who's a tremendous athlete, somebody who values winning, but at the same time can turn it off and has their priorities, you know, does know what their priorities are, and their priorities are to also be respectful to others and to be, you know, to honor their fans much as the fans honor him. And you don't often see that in this day and age of me, me, me. You see guys who are, you know, jackasses. I mean, pardon the, you know, the maybe the lack of tact with the phrase. You see so many athletes who are not role models, who do not want to be role models, who do not accept the responsibility, whether or not it's fair or not, that comes their way by being famous. So many of these guys are, you know, you don't want your kids to emulate. Nobody would ever say you wouldn't want your son or your daughter to emulate the attributes that Gordie Howe demonstrated throughout his on-ice career and then his off-ice career afterwards.
Yeah, sure, Drew. I mean, you have some players that have attributes that Gordie Howe had, and then you have other players that maybe don't have those attributes. I mean, for every Andrew Ladd, you might have a player who doesn't have those leadership qualities and doesn't, I guess, have that type of demeanor off of the ice. But one thing's for certain, when Gordie Howe died, part of the hockey world died, and he's someone that you just wanted to live forever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you hope that maybe if there are some players who take for granted the fact that they get to play in the NHL and they get to be role models, whether they like it or not, maybe Gordie Howe's life, they could look at him and they can say, okay, maybe, you know, I should really start to really appreciate what I have, and I should start to want to be a positive role model for others. But again, I mean, you know, Gordie Howe, it's just great to see that you have so many people that are coming out and saying that how much they touched his life and everything, sure, like that.
Well, at the beginning of the week, if you started the week by reading tributes to Muhammad Ali, who passed away last Saturday, we were on air, you know, when he passed away overnight between Friday night and Saturday. So if you read the tributes to Muhammad Ali earlier in the week, you could end your week by reading all the tributes to Gordie Howe. And while they certainly had different priorities and Muhammad Ali was a lot more political than Gordie Howe, the impact they had was significant. You know, Muhammad Ali maybe more on a worldwide stage, but Gordie Howe's impact on the hockey world and on Canada cannot be overstated. Wayne Gretzky, he of course spoke about Gordie Howe yesterday. Here's the great one talking about Gordie Howe.
I had so many great memories. Just being around him and getting to know him. 10-year-old child that gets to meet his idol. And he was, as I tell people all the time, he was nicer and better and bigger than I could ever have imagined. So from my point of view, I took the right idol. And he was, you know, the greatest player that ever lived and happened to be maybe the nicest athlete that I've ever met.
That's Wayne Gretzky talking about his idol, as he mentioned there, Gordie Howe. We all know why Wayne Gretzky wore 99 in tribute of Gordie Howe. Could you make an argument that the NHL should retire the number 9?
Well, that's it's a good question, Drew, especially after Gordie Howe has passed away. I would have no problem with that. I don't know if the NHL would ever do that,
mm-hmm,
but I would certainly have no problem with that. I have no problem with the fact that no one is able to wear number 99.
Yeah, the difference between 9 and 99 is nobody would wear 99 again because it was such a bizarre number when Gretzky started to wear it. You know,
well, and it's retired now.
I know it's retired now. And yes, of course, that's why they also can't wear it. But it was sort of such a unique number that nobody back, you know, when Gretzky came along, nobody would have thought to wear something in the 90s, like a number of like 99. So, you know, so that's why. But 9 is such a common number. I think everybody's probably got a player who, you know, who wears 9, at least most of the NHL teams that don't have that number already retired. You know, like, to your point, I would be fine if they decided to say nobody can wear number 9 again. It's in tribute of Gordie Howe. He was that impactful.
Right. And again, we don't know if there's any type of movement or sentiment to do that at the NHL level. But
sure,
certainly everybody thinks of Gordie Howe when you think of number 9. You might think of other players as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's first and foremost going to be Gordie Howe. And, you know, just listening to Wayne Gretzky speak, you know, we're going to have Al Strachan on, you know, yeah, a little bit later.
Hockey Hall of Fame journalist.
You mentioned that Wayne Gretzky chose number 99 because of Gordie Howe, you know, putting the two nines together and everything like that. But the impact that Gordie Howe on Wayne Gretzky's career was more than just that number, right? Like, Wayne Gretzky idolized Gordie Howe. You've seen the famous picture. I've actually got it as my Twitter profile picture right now.
Sure.
When Wayne Gretzky was, I believe, 11 years old. And Gordie Howe's putting the stick around Wayne Gretzky's neck and everything like that. I mean,
the only time Gretzky got a stick ever up that high was on Dougie Gilmore in 93, though.
Exactly. That's a good point.
Yeah.
But
Gordie played with his stick up at that level to intimidate people.
But Wayne Gretzky, throughout his career, tried to be Gordie Howe. Uh-huh. He wasn't the same type of player. Like, he wasn't as mean as Gordie Howe, no, but he tried to be that type of class act on the ice. Sure, he wanted to be the best goal scorer of all time, and he obviously was the best goal scorer of all time, but he wanted to kind of conduct himself and off the ice like Gordie Howe, because he saw the way Gordie Howe was off the ice. I mean, you're talking about a guy who was, it was almost like Gordie Howe was everybody's father, right?
Sure.
That's what he really was, and everybody looked up to him. And you even hear stories, and there were, you know, Joe Daly was on H&L yesterday talking about how, you know, Gordie Howe, he would, you know, go into the corner and he'd elbow you and put you on the ice, but nobody you really couldn't hate the guy because he was such a class act and so funny on the ice, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just like, what were you supposed to do? This guy, you've seen the pictures of how big he was in his heyday. I mean, this guy was built like a truck, and not only would he put you on your bum, but he would score a hat trick on the ice, right? And you just couldn't do anything about it.
Yeah.
And so the impact he had certainly on Wayne Gretzky's career was immense, but he had such an impact on so many different people's career. And that's why you saw the Canadian Prime Minister, give a comment. You saw even Barack Obama release a statement about Gordie Howe. I mean, how often do you see Barack Obama give statements about hockey players?
I was saying before the show started that I don't think that a U.S. president would have addressed a hockey player passing away any other time. I can't think of a player that resonated that much. I mean, obviously in Canada, yes, but that resonated that much in the United States that would have warranted the president of the United States coming out and giving a statement to that effect. I mean, I can't think of anything else along those lines. You know, as we go to break, here's the statement that Barack Obama read yesterday, much more on Gordie Howe to come in the show, of course. This is United States President Barack Obama. The list of hockey players who suited up in six different decades, including returning to the ice after being inducted into the Hall of Fame, is a short one. It starts and ends with Gordie Howe. But the list of kids who skated around the pond until dark, picturing themselves passing, scoring, and enforcing like Howe, dreaming of hoisting the Stanley Cup like him, that one comprises too many to count. Howe's productivity, perseverance, and humility personified his adopted hometown of Detroit, to which he brought four championships and which he represented as an all-star more than 20 times. The greatest players define their game for a generation. Over more than half a century on the ice, Mr. Hockey defined it for a lifetime. Michelle and I send our condolences to his sons and daughter, his family, and his loyal fans from Hockey Town to Hartford to Houston and across North America. That's United States President Barack Obama on Gordie Howe. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll shift our focus to the Winnipeg Jets. Much more still to come on Gordie Howe's passing. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Kane is in the building.
The top of the hour. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg with you on this Saturday morning. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. You're putting in an order with Keener. I'm here for some new IC golf shirts.
Yeah, we are getting some new Illegal Curve golf shirts.
Yeah, good.
Because we're golfing so much now.
Yes.
We need to have some more golf shirts.
Naturally. You got to wear a collared shirt.
They do a great job. A lot of people don't know that Keener jerseys do other things in addition to jerseys. I mean, they do baseball jerseys. They do football jerseys. They do hoodies.
They
do soccer jerseys. Euros going on right now.
Whatever you need.
They do tons of good stuff. And they're at their new location on Portage Avenue now. So
check them out. Check them out.
Definitely check them out.
KeenerJerseys.com. They're actually going to do some, looking into doing some softball jerseys for the legendary House of Ashkenazi.
Nice. I played for that team for a couple years, actually.
Yeah, I think you were asked to leave the team, if I'm not mistaken.
No, I was not asked to leave, but my baseball career went a little bit sideways.
Torn ACL?
I actually pitched a little bit.
Really?
Yeah, a couple innings.
Yeah.
Had a few strikeouts.
I don't see that working out well.
I used to pitch, actually, in hardball as well.
Really?
Yeah. I was known as the Sandy Koufax of the league.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Because you're the only Jewish guy in the league?
And I wasn't a lefty either.
Anyways, welcome back to the program. Shifting our focus to the Winnipeg Jets and lots of chatter, not out of Winnipeg, but lots of chatter regarding Jacob Trouba as of late. We all know that the Jets defenseman is a restricted free agent. And he employs an agent in Kurt Overhart, who's known for taking hardball stances, let's say, and advocating strongly for his client. There's no reason to think that that's going to be any different in this negotiation between Trouba and the Winnipeg Jets. But no, no news on that front per se, which isn't a surprise. It's only June 11th. You wouldn't expect that negotiations would really heat up quite possibly until July, August, closer to the training camp. There is no urgency right now if the Jets and Kurt and Jacob Trouba try and get a contract underway. But, you know, there is talk, and this comes out of Boston. Joe Haggerty, frequent guest on the program, quote, hockey sources indicate to CSN, that being Comcast Sports Network out in Boston, that Colorado, the Avalanche, are dangling Matt Duchene with the hopes of ultimately landing Jacob Trouba from the Winnipeg Jets. Matt Duchene's a pretty big name to be out there. What you know, when you hear Matt Duchene potentially for Jacob Trouba, what jumps to your mind? Do you think there's any validity to that trade possibility, or do you think that this is just, you know, it's a silly season right now in the NHL world?
It's possible, Drew, that there is some validity to this, but, you know, when you're talking about Matt Duchene, you're talking about an elite scorer in the NHL. You're talking about a guy who represented Canada at the Olympics. He scored 30 goals this past year for a pretty bad Colorado Avalanche team, right? Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about Matt Duchene and them dangling Matt Duchene for Jacob Trouba, I don't think that that would be a one-for-one trade. I would imagine there's draft picks coming back both ways. But when you're talking about Jacob Trouba, and Darren Dreger was on TSN earlier this week, TSN 1290 earlier this week, as he is every week on Hustler and Lawless, talking about it, everything he said was correct. And I truly believe that when you're talking about Jacob Trouba, it's going to be a more difficult contract situation than what you have with Mark Scheifele, because Mark Scheifele's coming off of a career year. A year in which he might have scored 40 goals. Certainly, he would have scored 35 goals
if he had been healthy the whole time.
He established himself as a number one center this year, Drew, mm-hmm. I would say. And I think you would agree with that. We talked about it a lot during this year's Illegal Curve show in NHL this week, right?
Sure.
But when you're talking about Jacob Trouba, he took a step back this year, in my opinion. And it wasn't just offensively. And sure, Jacob Trouba switched from the right side to the left side. I think that Jacob Trouba is a bona fide top four defenseman in the NHL. I think he's an excellent defenseman. He can skate. He can shoot the puck. He's physical. He's got a mean edge to him. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that I'm not a fan of Jacob Trouba, but I think when you hear that Jacob Trouba is asking for 7 years and $6 million a year, well, if you're the Winnipeg Jets, that's not an easy contract to get done. And, well, first of all, I think that's an overpay at this point. But when you have to sign Mark Scheifele, who's probably going to average $5-5.5 million a year, right?
Yeah, maybe even more.
Maybe more.
Yeah.
And then Dustin Byfuglien was just signed. He's now the highest paid guy on the team, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to consider that there are going to be other players that you're going to have to sign that are going to be coming off of their entry-level contracts. Like 2 years from now, I'm talking about, like a Nikolai Ehlers, right?
Yeah.
So I think with Jacob Trouba right now, I would agree with Darren Dreger that I don't think either side wants a bridge contract. And for PK Subban, it worked. For a team like Montreal, who can spend a little bit more money, or quite a bit more money than the Winnipeg Jets, we know that the Winnipeg Jets are not going to be a ceiling team, right? They're not going to spend to the salary cap. They're going to be around $60 million as opposed to $70 million, right?
Sure. Yeah, the cap might be down to $12 million any day now.
Right. Hopefully the dollar is closer to 90 cents as opposed to 70 cents, right, Drew?
Sure.
But I
just because you're going to Buffalo for the draft. That's the only reason you say that.
Absolutely. But I believe that the Jets would ideally like to sign Trouba to a 4 or 5 year deal. But the problem with that is then he's getting close to unrestricted free agency. Then he's at unrestricted free agency. So there lies the problem, right?
What?
If you sign him to 4 or 5 years after the contract, he becomes an unrestricted free agent. You don't want that. But do you want to sign him to 7 years at what he's asking for? Like, if the Jets can get Jacob Trouba at an average annual value of $4.5 million for 7 years, maybe they do it. But he seems to be asking for an average annual value closer to $6
million. Sure.
And I don't know if he's worth that at this point, Drew.
He's never cracked 30 points in the NHL. I mean, if you're talking about, if you want him to be an offensive defenseman or, you know, who has an offensive skill set, he's never cracked 30 points, 29 points, 22 points, 21 points. And then factoring that, then in addition to that, when he has Dustin Byfuglien and Tyler Myers also on the Winnipeg Jets, when is he going to get the opportunity to be an offensive defenseman? And I think the Jets learned a lesson when they signed Zach Bogosian to that bigger contract. You know, Bogosian making, you know, getting paid $5.1 million on a salary cap hit. You know, they signed him to that big contract after he had a good offensive year, and his offensive numbers have never been close to that.
Okay, again. Fair enough, Drew, but I do think that Jacob Trouba is better than Zach Bogosian. I like Zach Bogosian.
Too.
I've always been a fan of Zach Bogosian. I think he has a long NHL career ahead of him with the Buffalo Sabres, but... You know, just to play the devil's advocate, I mean, if you don't have Jacob Trouba on your team, how are you replacing him in your top four? The Jets don't have anybody right now that can replace Jacob Trouba. Josh Morrissey is going to come into the NHL most likely next year, but he can't step in and play a top four
you're
role.
You're assuming Trouba's going to play on the left side again.
Well, regardless if he plays on the left side or his natural right side, uh-huh. I would assume that he's going to play on the left side. But the point is, he's a guy that can play 25 minutes a game.
Absolutely.
I mean, he's a valuable member of this Jets team. So I'm not advocating that the Jets should trade him by any means. I don't think they are trading him. I think that they're just in some tough negotiations. And I do believe that Scheifele and his camp are probably waiting to see what happens with Jacob Trouba and vice versa, right? Depending on who signs first. I mean, Scheifele could always sign first. We don't know that. But the point being that...
I think the Scheifele negotiation is an easier one because the comparables are more obvious.
Sure.
There's a lot of comparables out there, guys. You know, take off the top of my head, Nick Bjugstad. You know, that's, you could probably make a comparison between the two of them, numbers-wise, where they were drafted, et cetera, and say, okay, this is in and around the range where Scheifele needs to get paid.
I think when Richie wrote his article, he compared Scheifele to, I believe it was Ryan Nugent-Hopkins as well.
Sure, possible. Yeah. There's a possibility. There's lots of guys out there, I think, who've put up similar numbers to Mark Scheifele that everybody can use to come to an agreement.
Right.
The problem with Trouba is, are you paying him based on potential, which is what really Kurt Overhart and Trouba's camp would demand that you're doing, because he's never put up any numbers that would say he warrants $6 million a year.
I think you're absolutely paying him based on potential. I think you're also paying Scheifele based on potential, except for the fact that you know what Mark Scheifele is, I think, more so than Jacob Trouba. But as we know, defensemen mature a little bit more.
Sure.
And I know, Drew, you might be sick of hearing that.
No,
but it really is the case. I mean, you look at defensemen around the NHL, whether even it's a Duncan Keith who had to play a little bit in the AHL. I mean, Duncan Keith wasn't a dominant defenseman at 21 years old. It was until he was 25 or 26 that he really became a dominant defenseman.
But he
right?
didn't get paid like a dominant defenseman
sure.
You know, that early in in his career.
And that's
either.
Why I'm saying I think this is going to be a little bit more of a contentious negotiation. Not saying that the Winnipeg Jets and Jacob Trouba's camp are there's going to be animosity, but I just think it's going to be more difficult for them to come to that magic number. Because Scheifele, I think we would agree, if you want to sign Scheifele to 7 years, $6 million a year, whatever it is, $7 million a year, I'd have absolutely no problem with that. You look at Mark Scheifele, went over to the World Hockey Championships, and was excellent for Canada. Like, to me, Mark Scheifele has proven he's a number one center in the NHL. I have no problem with high numbers. When you're talking big boy numbers, 7 years,
because,
$6 million, sure.
And he's got numbers to back it up because he
right.
scored, you know, 60 points this past year. He had
right.
29 goals, and he would have had closer to 35. You're absolutely right. Whereas the flip side is Trouba, who probably wants to get paid like a quote-unquote big boy,
right,
doesn't have any numbers offensively to say that he deserves to be paid as a big boy. What happens if you pay him $6 million a year? Or 5.5 or whatever big number, and the offensive game doesn't develop, and he turns out to be a very good defenseman, but a very good defenseman who, you know, taps out at 20 to maybe 30 points a season.
And Drew, my answer to that would be you have to take that risk because he was a first-round pick and you don't have anybody that can replace him. In addition, Tobias Enstrom's contract has 2 years left on it, and there's always the possibility that they don't re-sign him. Right.
Sure.
So if Tobias Enstrom is not going to be a Winnipeg Jet 2 or 3 years from now, and you have Dustin Byfuglien and Tyler Myers under contract, sure, but that defense without Jacob Trouba doesn't look very good. And that's no offense to guys like Ben Chiarot and Julian Melchiori.
But those guys aren't top-line guys.
Right.
They would, I mean, if you gave them truth serum, they would say, yeah, my career, I'm probably not going to be a top-line NHL.
Jacob Trouba, even though he had a down year offensively, where you expected him maybe to be closer
to... He had a down year defensively, too, I would say.
Sure, fair enough. And part of that had to do with the fact that he switched over from
sure.
the right side to the left
adjustment
side.
When you, period, absolutely.
Drew, when you play on the right side your entire career and then you're asked to play on the left side because you're weaker on the left side, there is an adjustment, and it isn't just one or two games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it can take an entire season to make that adjustment, right? And I do think Jacob Trouba finished the year stronger. It was the middle part of the season, you know, the from games like 20 to 60 where he really struggled, in my opinion. And when you look at Jacob Trouba, I just don't think you can replace him. So if you think, Drew, that he might not be a 50-point defenseman ever, and he's always going to be a 30, 35-point defenseman,
I'm not sure he's
I have no problem with that because he has other intangibles. He's a great skater. He has the ability to be a shutdown defenseman, and that's the way I looked at Zach Bogosian. And I liked the contract at the time, and Zach Bogosian struggled as well with his decision-making and his ability to play in the defensive zone. But I still think Jacob Trouba is worth a longer-term contract. Like, in a perfect world, mm-hmm. I think Jacob Trouba you would sign to a bridge contract. And then he plays those 2 years, and if he earns a higher salary, then fine. But I think from the Jets' perspective, they're worried about that because then if he does put up 40 points, 50 points, then
more.
They're going to have to pay him even more than they would if they signed him to a 6 or 7 year deal.
But it sounds like Overhart and Trouba's representatives are asking for the money that a 40-point defenseman would get. And he's never proven to be that. So, I mean, they're driving hard for their client, as they should. I don't have a problem with that. I think this is going to be a very interesting negotiation, and how it ends up playing out, I think, will be an interesting thing to watch throughout the course of the summer for the Winnipeg Jets. Let's head to break. When we come back, the Stanley Cup Finals are still going on. Who knew? We'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Shot by Kessel, blocked by Tierney. Another shot, save, rebound. Great stop by Martin Jones off Connor Sheary. Maybe the save of the series from Martin Jones, and he hangs on. Now a rink wide feed goes over to the near side. In front, Hornqvist driving to the net. What a kick save by Martin Jones off Hornqvist, who had Braun draped all over him. Held in, sent in front. What a save by Martin Jones. An amazing stop off Connor Sheary, moving to his right with 14:15 left in the third period.
44 saves later, Martin Jones, really the only reason why the Stanley Cup final continues with a Game 6 tomorrow night back in San Jose. The Sharks go into Pittsburgh. They ruin the celebration. Martin Jones single-handedly ruins the celebration with a 4-2 victory. Pittsburgh still leads the series 3-2. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Ezzy, it was the Martin Jones show in Game 5. As I mentioned, 44 saves, many of them of the absolute highlight reel variety. He is the reason the Sharks still have a pulse. And Game 6 goes tomorrow night. I believe Game 7 of this, if it requires a Game 7, is going to be played in the middle of August.
It's funny. Well, hey, I love this, Drew, because we have a series now. And I realize that there are some people out there, especially Pittsburgh Penguins fans, mm-hmm. that wanted this series to be over in 5 games. But, you know, you mentioned Martin Jones. Martin Jones has been the better goalie in this series. I mean, there's no question. Now he has 2 games in which he's made 40-plus saves,
sure.
right? And you mentioned 44 saves by Martin Jones on Wednesday night. But, you know, you got to give the San Jose Sharks credit for that incredible start that they have. Brent Burns and Logan Couture score 2 minutes apart.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, Pittsburgh tied the game up, and it kind of looked like the momentum was swinging back in Pittsburgh's favor.
Well, if Pittsburgh doesn't hit, would they hit two posts and a crossbar on that power play right after they had tied
right.
the game?
Right.
If one of those sneaks past and they take the 3-2 lead,
right.
then you almost feel like the route may have been on or something.
Right. But you got to give San Jose credit because in this series, Pittsburgh scored the first goal in every game, and they've had the better start in every game. And to me, San Jose hasn't had that same type of, whether you want to call it intensity, desperation, urgency. They haven't had that in this series. They had that in the series against St. Louis. And I think that the San Jose Sharks really are starting to play their best hockey, and they really haven't at all. Drew, their best game was Game 4, which they lost. That was San Jose's best game,
mm-hmm.
and that was Matt Murray's best game as well. They only ended up getting 1 goal past him, right? But if you look at the 5 games in the series so far, I would say that Pittsburgh was the better team in 4 of those 5. I mean, Pittsburgh should be hoisting the cup. Don't get me wrong here. I mean, Pittsburgh has been the better team. I mean, when you look at the high-quality scoring chances, right, Pittsburgh had 19 high-quality scoring chances in that game, mm-hmm. whereas San Jose had 7. And, I mean, 19-7 has been kind of the story. Well, it's been 2-1.
Sorry, and 19 high-scoring, you know, high-quality scoring chances in a 60-minute hockey game is probably up there towards the most scoring chances in a game this season.
Right.
That's how one-sided the contest was.
Right.
You know, and that's how big Martin Jones was for the Sharks.
Right, and Mark-Edward Vlasic and Justin Braun have, for the most part, done an excellent job of shutting down the Crosby-Hornquist-Sheary line, but that line is still getting a lot of scoring chances. In that Game 5, that line was still getting their chances. He's still getting pucks to the net and still getting deflections and stuff like that. To me, the series has still been all about how Pittsburgh's defense has stifled the San Jose Sharks' offense. And, I mean, we talked about, you know, Brent Burns got his first goal of the series. Logan Couture, that was his first goal of the series. He's, of course, leading all players in points, but mm-hmm. he certainly hasn't been racking up the points in the Stanley Cup final, Drew. And, you know, when you look at really who have been the best players for the San Jose Sharks offense, offensively, like, would it be Melker Carlson? I mean, they just haven't got that many goals, right? Like, right. They've been averaging 2 goals a game in this series.
Until Brent Burns scored a minute into the game, that was the first time, aside from game two when they won in overtime, aside from game two, that was the first time the Sharks had the lead in the series. You know, that's an incredible stat that it's taken them, it took them, you know, 5 games to get a lead.
Right, and, you know, we talked about the Crosby-Hornquist-Sheary line. Haglund, Bonino, and Kessel HBK. Have still been a dominant line, and to me, they still haven't been able to slow down the Pittsburgh Penguins. Like, coming through the neutral zone, the Pittsburgh Penguins have been the fastest team throughout the playoffs, and the San Jose Sharks have not been able to thwart that, right? Mm-hmm. So you still don't have a series right now where the San Jose Sharks are feeling like they're able to control the play offensively. Like, to me, they've been on their heels, Drew.
The whole time.
And Martin Jones, sure, he bailed them out here. But that's what happens in the playoffs. You see that year after year. I mean, you saw Jonathan Quick do that for the LA Kings a couple of years ago.
Goalies need to steal games.
Right. And
then San Jose never had a goalie who could steal a game until now.
Right. And, you know, we've got game 6 coming up tomorrow night. Mm-hmm. But if you're the Pittsburgh Penguins, you don't want that series going back to Pittsburgh.
Well, look, if it goes, if Pittsburgh somehow loses the series, I'm going to be fairly stunned. They've been that dominant in the course of the first 5 games. I would be fairly stunned. But you're right. I mean, San Jose is now going home. They have it's on home ice. They've been good on home ice in the playoffs. And it wouldn't shock me if it goes back to Pittsburgh for game 7, but I would be shocked if Pittsburgh was to lose game 7 on home ice. That being said, it's a one game. At that point in time, it's one game, and you never know what's going to happen in one game, and you never want it to go from being down up 3-1 to being tied 3-all if you're the Pittsburgh Penguins.
And when you talk about going back home, San Jose's been 8-3. In 11 games throughout the playoffs, so they've been really good at home. They weren't good at home in the regular season, Drew. They were a very good road team.
They lost to the Jets twice at home.
Yes, so San Jose has now turned into a better home team in the second season,
mm-hmm.
the postseason.
In the playoffs, yeah.
But when you're looking at the huge advantage, it's last change, and that's so important because why Pittsburgh has been so effective, in my opinion, is because they've had 3 scoring lines, which mm-hmm. they didn't have. In 2009, they had it. With Jordan Staal centering the third line, and now they've got Evgeny Malkin centering that third line with Chris Kunitz and Brian Rust, right?
Right.
I mean, Evgeny Malkin in all other situations is a second or first liner, but because in Pittsburgh they've got the ability to spread it out.
Sure.
So
the way circumstances played out.
Right. So, for example, you're not going to want that third pairing of Brendan Dillon and Roman Polak up against the Evgeny Malkin line. So preferably, you're probably going to see either Mark-Edward Vlasic and Justin Braun, or you're going to see Brent Burns and Paul Martin up against the Malkin line. But that puts a lot of pressure on them, and I think that's something that we've seen. Brendan Dillon and Roman Polak haven't been very good. They're good defensemen, but I think in a series, when you're going up against a Pittsburgh team that's faster and more offensively talented than any other team they've seen,
the speed of Pittsburgh is too much for those two guys.
Yes, so you're going to see Pete DeBoer rely on his top four defensemen a lot, but he does have last change, so If San Jose is able to win game 6, I mean, that's terrible news for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And I realize momentum sometimes doesn't carry over.
Sure.
But I think when you're in a situation where you were up 3-1, and San Jose has been in this situation before. but on the other end of it. They've been up 3-1, and they've given up a 3-1 lead.
Sure. When you're up...
A 3-0 lead.
When you're down 3-1, like San Jose is, or was, now it's 3-2, but when you're down 3-1, you really have nothing to lose.
Right.
And so if Pittsburgh had won Game 5 and the Sharks go out meekly, then you're like, you know, you almost put an asterisk next to their Stanley Cup Finals appearance. Yeah, they were there, but were they just happy to be there and they got blown out? Now that it's 3-2, it is, you know, this will be looked back on as a much more competitive series just by the nature of it being going to six games.
So just on that note, Drew, really quickly, I mean, this hasn't been an epic Stanley Cup final. I mean, when you're talking about previous Stanley Cup finals, like the last time Pittsburgh won the Stanley Cup in 2009 against the Detroit Red Wings, to me, like, I'm a huge hockey fan, as you know. I'm going to watch the Stanley Cup finals. I'm going to watch every game, regardless of who's in the Stanley Cup final. But, I mean, these games...
There hasn't been a lead change.
Exactly.
Except for overtime in Game 2.
Right.
Where, you know, that was the only lead change when San Jose won. I mean, the fact that there were, you know, four goals scored in the first 5 minutes of game five, that's been the most memorable moment of the series so far.
I would say that game five was probably the best game of the five.
Uh-huh. I would agree with that.
And we saw Connor Sheary score in overtime, and there have been two overtimes, but those games were pretty much dominated by Pittsburgh.
That's right.
I mean, right? So it hasn't been an amazing series.
Game two should never...
It's now a series. I mean, Pittsburgh obviously could have won the series in five. We're going back to San Jose now for game six. But I think that game six, like you said, I mean, who knows what can happen? It's one game. But I would definitely like to see whoever wins, if San Jose loses and Pittsburgh wins their fourth Stanley Cup, I would just like to see a competitive game, lead changes. You know what I mean? Like, I'd like to see a game where they really earn the Stanley Cup. And I bet we will see that game.
It seems like it's taken San Jose almost the first four games that it took them a while to get on track in this series. Now, they won game two, and they were lucky to win game two, let's be honest. And I mean, it could have been over 4-0 if they don't win game two. If Matt Murray doesn't give up a bad goal late in the third period, it could have been a whole separate series.
Right.
But, you know, it seems like San Jose, now I don't know if they, you know, it seemed like that first 5 minutes of game five was the first time that they've actually been able to get their feet under them and play their game in the gravity of the moment.
Well, they have to play like that again, Drew, because they can't let Pittsburgh come into San Jose and score early and then play their type of defensive style and that they have been throughout the series. But, you know, just on that point here, I mean, I don't think San Jose is going to go out quietly. When you talk about Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau, who have waited 20 years to get to this point, and there are other players too, a guy like Brent Burns, Marc-Edward Vlasic, they've never been to the Stanley Cup final before, so I don't think that they're going to go down quietly.
I think in the first four games, and really the last 40 minutes of game five, the moment was too big for them. That they weren't able to handle the pressure and the spotlight and everything else. Now, whether or not you agree or disagree with that, that's fine. It's my opinion. But the fact that they're into Game 6 now...
I usually disagree with your opinion.
But having now that they're into Game 6 and they still have a pulse and they really haven't played well at all, with the exception of 5 minutes in the first five minutes of game five.
Well, no, San Jose played well in game four. That's right.
They played
San Jose in game four.
They played better.
That was a pretty even game. I could have seen San Jose win that. Matt Murray was better. Sure, San Jose wasn't finishing. They hit some posts and stuff like that. They've played, I think, maybe four good periods of the five games. Let's say that. So you're right. I mean, they're going to have to elevate their game, even though they won game five.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what happens. Pittsburgh, every time... First of all, Pittsburgh has only lost two games in a row once throughout the playoffs. So they've been pretty consistent throughout the playoffs. They haven't really, like, it's not like Pittsburgh's gone down 2-0 or 3-0 in any of these series, right? They've been leading most of these series, and Washington was the series that gave them the most trouble. But certainly Tampa Bay was not a problem for Pittsburgh at all, right?
Right.
So we'll see what happens, and it's become a pretty good series. As you said earlier in the series, it looked like Pittsburgh might have even swept the series or won the series in five. So hopefully we see a great game tomorrow, because
tomorrow
when you talk about the Stanley Cup Finals, even though we're, you know, it's now June 11th, I always like to see a competitive game. I always like to see a team really earn a Stanley Cup and the other team make them earn the Stanley Cup.
Sure. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about Mr. Hockey, Gordie Howe. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You know, you kind of know this day is coming. You know, I talked to some a couple weeks ago, and they put Gordie into a hospice. And, you know, they were trying to make him as comfortable as possible. But until it actually happens, you know, you don't really think it's going to happen. And so it's a sad day for everyone.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. That, of course, Wayne Gretzky continuing to talk about his idol, his very good friend, Gordie Howe. Drew Mandel alongside Ezra Ginsberg with you on this Saturday morning. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. You know, it's hard to really even begin to sum up Gordie Howe's contribution to the hockey world. The numbers tell one story, and it's just remarkable that somebody can pull off what he did at the, you know, throughout the course of his career, the numbers he was able to put up both in the NHL, in the WHA. I mean, the thrill that he must have had playing with his sons for those last few years, playing, you know, in Hartford, you know, for the Whale, and then, you know, of course, playing for the Houston Arrows. And it just, it's really, truly remarkable, the career and the impact that Gordie Howe had on the hockey world.
You mentioned his sons, Mark and Marty, mm-hmm. and, you know, people forget Mark Howe is a Hall of Fame defenseman.
That's
as
right.
Well. I mean, Mark Howe, you know, is never going to be considered to be as great a player as Gordie Howe, who is known as the greatest player to ever play the game. But when he played with Mark and Marty Howe, I mean, these guys were amazing as a triumvirate, if you want to call it that, right?
Sure.
And Bobby Clark has actually said that he thought that Mark Howe was the best defenseman that he ever played with. So it's really remarkable. I mean, how often do you have a father and son who are both in the Hall of Fame, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was one of the highlights of his career. There are many highlights of his career. And really, it's when you're talking about Gordie Howe and you're talking about how many lives he touched and all of that, but people forget that at the end of the day, he was a tough SOB on the ice, right?
Well, that's just it.
And
yeah.
You did not want to upset him. There's a famous story that Wayne Gretzky told where Wayne Gretzky stole the puck from Gordie Howe during a game because Wayne Gretzky played against Gordie Howe in the WHA when Wayne Gretzky was playing for the Indianapolis Racers. That was his rookie pro season. And there's a famous story that Gordie Howe tracks Wayne Gretzky down and takes the puck back from Wayne Gretzky, who had stolen the puck from Gordie Howe, and he says, "Don't ever embarrass me on the ice again." And I'm sure Wayne Gretzky was pooping in his pants at that point. But it's such an amazing career, Drew, as you mentioned. You know, all of the All-Star appearances, the Stanley Cups, the Hart trophies, the Art Ross trophies, all that. And, you know, something to mention about Gordie Howe's career. I mean, during his career, he didn't make a lot of money. And he actually made most of his money after his pro hockey career with all of the appearances, the speaking engagements, signing autographs and stuff like that. And I think something else to mention, too, is Colleen Howe and the impact that she had not only on his life and her kid's life, but the entire hockey world, because she unfortunately passed away, I believe it was 5 years ago. But she was really influential in managing his kind of business career at the end, because Gordie Howe made a business of just being Gordie Howe.
Absolutely, because people in his era, there was no real money to be made, no significant money, not like, you know, we were talking about.
Well,
you know,
Alan Eagleson was also stealing it. But
That's a separate issue altogether, I suppose. But, I mean, we're talking about, you know, Trouba a couple segments ago, you know, $6 million for 20 points. It's like, you know, Gordie Howe's, you know, making $50,000, $60,000, maybe $100,000 when he's at his peak.
Well, and yesterday I heard Paul Edmonds filling in for Huss on Huss and Lawless and talking to Gary about, you know, who the comparable to Gordie Howe would be nowadays. I mean, there is no comparable, but he would probably be one of the highest paid guys in the league. I mean, if you want to compare him, I know he's a defenseman, but he was like a Dustin Byfuglien. And Dustin Byfuglien can score, he can hit, he can impact the game in a variety of ways, right? Like, you can't just compare like Gordie Howe to a Milan Lucic, for example.
Well, I mean, with all due respect to Milan Lucic, he should be, and he's actually our UFA of the week coming up later on in the show, so that's fortuitous timing. But
you know what
Milan
I mean,
Lucic,
right, Drew?
Yeah, right, because the power forward, I mean, you think power forward, you think Milan Lucic in this day and age, but that's probably the only time that Gordie Howe and Milan Lucic's name should ever be in the same sentence.
Well, and again, Milan Lucic is a great player, but when you're talking about Gordie Howe, you're talking about a guy who scored 35, 40 goals for 20 years.
He was, take the peak of Eric Lindros. When Eric Lindros was the most ferocious player in the league and was dominant and nobody could handle Eric Lindros whatsoever.
And he did that for 3 decades.
And then do that for 3 decades.
That's what he was all about, right?
Exactly.
And so, you know, whether you think Wayne Gretzky or Bobby Orr was the greatest player of all time, there's certainly not going to be anybody that had that type of impact on the game because of the way he crossed different lines and decades and everything like that and went to the WHA and Hall had, as you mentioned in the first segment, Drew, was a very impactful player at that time, right?
Sure.
So it's a very sad day for the hockey world. And, you know, the only good part about it is that we get to talk about Gordie Howe because we can fill up a 3-hour show talking about Gordie Howe and the influence that he had on the sport of hockey. He's going to continue to have an influence on the sport of hockey. There's only going to be one Gordie Howe, and people are always going to remember Gordie Howe and are always going to talk fondly about him.
Yeah, I do recommend to everyone, if you get the opportunity, read Paul Wiesek's column in today's Winnipeg Free Press. It is about Gordie Howe, and Paul does a real good job in summing up Gordie Howe's legacy, both on and off the ice, about how, you know, he wasn't a saint on the ice. By no stretch of the, was he a saint, but he was, you know, he ends by just calling him a damn good Canadian, and I thought that's a nice fitting way to sum up Gordie Howe. Do recommend reading Paul Wiesek in today's Winnipeg Free Press. Let's head to break. When we come back, we shift our focus to the NHL draft. Mark Seidel from the North American Central Scouting Service joins us to talk about draft eligible prospects. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Hour 2, coming up next on TSN 1290. Hour number 2 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning, June the 11th. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Mark Seidel. Mark is with the North American Central Scouting Bureau talking about the upcoming NHL draft. Mark, good morning and thanks very much for joining us.
Morning, guys. Happy to be here.
Our pleasure to have you, Mark. Let's get right into it. As the draft is a little less than 2 weeks away, 2 weeks yesterday is when everybody will be gathered in Buffalo, New York. Of course, we will be live on scene bringing you all the latest from the NHL draft. Mark, is it a foregone conclusion that the Toronto Maple Leafs, assuming they hold on to that number one overall pick, are going to walk up at the First Union Center and announce Austin Matthews as the first overall pick?
Yeah, you know, as much as Gary Bettman and the NHL tries to keep a little bit of mystery, and certainly the media wants to try to build it up that there may be some debate about Lane or Matthews or Puljujärvi. No, when Toronto steps up to the plate on Friday night, they're going to announce Austin Matthews the number one pick, and then your Winnipeg Jets are going to have the pick of the litter after that. So I think it's a foregone conclusion. Matthews fills exactly what Toronto needs. He's exactly perfect for the structure they're building and where they're going down the road. So there's not really a lot of debate, and you'll hear a bunch of stuff between now and then that people are offering a bunch for the first overall pick, and maybe they're considering Lainey, maybe they're considering Puljujärvi, but at the end of the day, it'll be Matthews when Brendan Shanahan and Lou Lamoriello walk up there.
Mark, as you can imagine, we've talked a lot about Patrick Laine and Jesse Puljujärvi on this station when the Jets were awarded the second overall pick. In your opinion, how big is the drop-off between Patrick Laine and Jesse Puljujärvi? And if you're Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff, are you drafting Laine over Puljujärvi?
Yeah, I would take Laine ahead of him. The gap is there. It's not as big as some people would make it sound. You know, Jesse Puljujärvi is an unbelievable player as well. And people forget in this business we have such a short memory of teams. Like, you know, at the World Juniors, Jesse Puljujärvi was probably the best player in that whole tournament, dominated at times. And there was talk at that point about him and Matthews. Was there a battle there? And Laine was going to be third. Laine had such an unbelievable second half. And in this business, you want to see guys that are trending upwards, that are playing better. And certainly, Jesse Puljujärvi got better as the year went on. But you can't argue with Patrick Laine's finish to the year. I mean, he was unbelievable. He's certainly shown that he's going to score at the NHL level and showed that his game could take the next step. And I think if you're Winnipeg Jets fans, that's exciting because you want to get a guy who's trending in the right way, certainly getting better and you know, has such a huge upside for him. So I think the gap is there, but I think at the end of the day, it'll be Laine for sure.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Mark Seidel joins us to talk about the final rankings for the North American Central Scouting Service at the for the upcoming NHL Draft. Mark, if you look at defensemen, it's a great year for left-side defensemen in the OHL who played their junior hockey in the OHL. You have Mikhail Sergachev at number 6 overall. He, of course, being from the Windsor Spitfires. There's also Jacob Chychrun and Olli Juolevi of the London Knights. You know, why do you have Sergachev higher than both Chychrun and Juolevi? What does he bring to the table, maybe a little bit better than the other guys?
Well, I think in this business, what we're trying to do, and certainly over 20 years of doing this, what you're trying to figure out is in 5 or 6 or 10 years, who's going to have the better career? Who's going to be the better player? And there really is not a lot of difference between the three of them. Now, they're different. All three have different aspects. But for us, Sergachev has the most upside. I think he's the guy that has the chance to be the best defenseman of the three of them. But the other two are going to be phenomenal. So the thing about Sergachev, the other two lack a little bit, is he's got some nastiness to him. He's not afraid to whack and hack. He's not afraid to make guys pay the price, step up and finish checks, do a lot of physical parts of the game that, you know, I think we've seen the NHL guys have to be able to do and play. Certainly Chychrun has more offense than the other two guys. I think he loves to jump in a rush, as a phenomenal skater. And Olli Juolevi is one of those guys that coaches are just going to love. You can keep firing him out. He's safe. He's simple. He's smart. He makes the right play. He manages the puck extremely well. So I think they've all got different traits, and really it's very small difference between any of the three. But for us, Sergachev is the best of the three, and then it goes Chychrun and then Juolevi.
Mark, sticking with defensemen here for a second, Jake Bean of the Calgary Hitmen out of the WHL. I know I saw him play a little bit at the World Under-18s in Grand Forks. He's projected to go kind of in the middle of the first round. He's actually the highest-ranked player out of the WHL. What do you think the ceiling is for Jake Bean, and is it just an aberration that this year the WHL doesn't seem to have very many top-rated forwards?
Yeah, firstly, I think it's Jake Bean's sort of like the redheaded stepchild. Everybody talks about the top three defensemen and leaves Jake Bean out. And really, he's almost in that same mix. I mean, we've got him at 12 overall, and the other two, or the other three end up at 6, 8, and 9. So, you know, Jake Bean is an unreal defenseman. And I'll be honest, at the beginning of the year, I wasn't sure he was going to be a first-rounder coming into the season, but had a great year out there. And as you say, is the top-ranked player coming out of the West. And as far as, you know, people out West being concerned about, you know, is it a down year? I think this game is very cyclical. You've seen different leagues in the past had big years. Quebec a couple years ago had a bunch of guys in the first round and then kind of dropped off. And the West certainly has had their years where they've had a number of guys high. It's just a cyclical thing. And every once in a while you get into a year where a certain birth date, a league doesn't have as many good players. But, you know, as everybody knows, you're going to have Nolan Patrick probably going first overall next year coming to the Western League. And so I don't think there's any need to be alarmed out there. I just think it's kind of a cyclical thing that happens sometimes in this business.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mark Seidel is our guest. We're talking about North American Central Scouting's final rankings for the upcoming NHL draft in Buffalo, New York. Of course, complete coverage here on TSN 1290. Hustler and Lawless will be down there. So will Ezra Ginsberg, my colleague to my left, and Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com. Mark, you know, we hear a lot. Obviously, we've heard Matthews, Laine, and Puljujärvi. No questions there. And then you're hearing Tkachuk and Dubois. But Clayton Keller, coming out of the U.S. Under-18 program, the National Team Development Program, is a guy who you have number 5 overall. Most people have him consensus, you know, top 5, top 6, in and around there. But he's not getting any buzz whatsoever. You know, what is it about Clayton Keller? Why isn't anybody talking about him, particularly because it seems clear he's going to be picked very early in that first round?
Well, especially when you figure the way he plays, he's such a dynamic and offensive guy that will bring fans out of their seats and you know, really become a fan favorite. And he's a smaller guy, which I think certainly endears himself to fans. I think why he doesn't get a lot of buzz is he comes out of the U.S. program. We don't see them a lot. Certainly, you know, you see them at tournaments, and there's not a lot of fan base, obviously, for their league playing in the USHL and, you know, the under-18s and stuff. You get to see them a little bit. But it's not like the Memorial Cup and the Canadian Hockey League where they're on TV every week. And, you know, certainly there's a lot more media up here in Canada. So I think in that regard, he doesn't get the buzz. But as far as being a player that, you know, I think when we go back, or when we go in the future in 10 years, we'll look back and say, man, that kid, you know, how did he fall? Maybe to 5-6. He could end up being one of the top two or three players out of this entire draft. You know, the game is getting smaller, dynamic, quicker. I think he fits all that kind of stuff. He certainly saw the records he set at the U.S. program in terms of scoring, beating guys like Patrick Kane's record and Jack Eichel, all kinds of different guys' records. He demolished them. So he really is an exciting player that I think doesn't get the love of some of the other guys, but I think at the end of the day is going to be an unbelievable NHL player.
Mark, wanted to ask you about Tyson Jost. He was the captain of Team Canada's entry at the World Under-18s, and I got a chance to see Tyson Jost. He's committed to play for the University of North Dakota. A lot of people have Tyson Jost going in the top 10. You had him ranked 19th in your final rankings, and I realize that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be drafted there. But what do you like and dislike most about his game?
You know what, I think the best part for Tyson, there's a bias, and anybody that wants to say there isn't a bias about guys that play Junior A, and obviously, both he and Dante Fabro played in the BCHL, and that's the best junior A league in Canada, sort of tier two junior A. But anybody that says there isn't a bias against guys coming out of that league is lying to you. It's a difficult league at times to evaluate because some nights you're seeing teams play, you know, good teams in a competitive game, and some nights they're beating some of the weaker sisters, and it's hard to evaluate. And I don't care what anybody says. A lot of guys in this business won't admit to it, but it's difficult to evaluate coming out of that league, coming out of, you know, Minnesota high school, places where there's a disparity in the competition. So I think through the year, certainly, you know, both those guys were guys that we watched a lot to try and evaluate where they would fit in. But when they went to the under-18s, I think they both had unbelievable under-18s. And I think the thing about Tyson Jost that everybody came away most impressed is the guys in BC, in Penticton, certainly talked about what a kid he was and the character and the leadership. And then he went to the under-18s with a lot of high-end, high-profile guys who had walked in there and named them captain and really took that team over and did an unreal job. So, you know, there's not a lot not to like about him. It's a good draft this year, and certainly because of it, you know, he falls in that 19 spot for us. But at the end of the day, when you can get a centerman like that that has that kind of leadership and down the road you know is going to be a solid NHLer with it, there's not a lot of risk to him because you know what he's bringing to the game. So I think it's he'll be a good pick. And like you say, he'll go a lot higher than 19, I think. At the end of the day, we'll see where it all ends up. But certainly on our list, that's where he ends up.
Mark Seidel joins us. Mark is with the North American Central Scouting Service. We're talking about the 2016 NHL Draft coming up 2 weeks from yesterday in Buffalo, New York, with the first round. Mark, obviously the Jets have the number 2 overall pick, but they also have that second first round pick, number 22 overall, the one they got from Chicago in the Andrew Ladd trade at the deadline. You know, is there a player that, you know, from a Winnipeg Jets perspective or Winnipeg Jets fan perspective, a guy that you would see sort of in the later first round, that this is a guy who has, you know, is probably going to be there or might be there, but also has the talent where he could make a significant impact later on down the road? Somebody maybe a little bit under the radar that people aren't talking about over at, you know, the number 22 spot.
Yeah, there's a couple guys that jump to mind. One is the big defenseman out of Windsor in the OHL, Logan Stanley. Again, we talk about a year ago and how kids have the right in this business to get better. If you'd have asked me a year ago, I would have told you he was probably going to be a second, third, fourth round pick simply because he's 6'7". Rocky Thompson went into Windsor this year and really turned him into an unbelievable defenseman. Give the kid credit. He put the time in last summer and certainly put the time in and listened and got coached up this year and has turned himself into, in my mind, a for sure first rounder. Skates well. Again, has that nastiness to his game that I think you know, Kevin Cheveldayev wants his guys to have back there, and certainly that's the way they want to play. So I think he kind of fits in there if he falls to them. The other guy is Yermin Rupsov, who's a Russian centerman, big, strong centerman that not many people talk about. People are concerned about, you know, if you draft him, is he going to come to the National Hockey League ultimately, or is he going to play in the KHL? But every indication we have is this kid wants to come over and play in the NHL against the best players in the world. Big, strong, can score, certainly dominated this year at the World Junior A Challenge at times. But also real responsible defensively, has been taught pretty well over there and has been coached up. And a lot of guys don't talk about him because he's out of sight, out of mind, and there's the Russian factor where people are concerned, but there's a guy that if Winnipeg was to be able to get him at 22, I think they'd certainly be getting great value.
Mark, there's just a couple players that we want to ask you about, and we appreciate you coming on. We're certainly getting pumped up for the draft coming up in less than 2 weeks now. Brett Howden of Oakbank, Manitoba, his brother Quentin, as you know, has already been drafted into the NHL by the Florida Panthers. Brett's a guy who had a really good season this year for the Moose Jaw Warriors and then again went to the World Under-18s and was really good for Team Canada. What do you think his ceiling is as an NHL player, Brett Howden?
Well, I think Brett is one of those kids that when you're looking at evaluating players and you look down the road, you see him as a piece of a championship team. You look at these teams that are playing right now in the National Hockey League in the Stanley Cup Final, and you need guys like Brett Howden. Not going to put up big numbers, but certainly he's going to do a lot of things right, be on the right side of the puck, put the puck into the right areas, and do a lot of good things with it. Defensively, I think as he gets bigger and stronger, he's going to be a hard guy to be able to evade, and he's going to be the guy the coaches are going to tap on the shoulder to go out and shut down the other team's best line. So, I think he's one of those guys that teams look at and say, he's not going to be a star for us. I don't know if he's going to be a first rounder. I wouldn't take him in the first round, but he's one of those guys that a team can say, okay, in 3 or 4 years we can plug him in. We know he's at worst going to be a third line centerman for us. And at that point in time, we're pretty happy if we get him sort of in the top of the second round, middle of the second round.
Mark, we'll let you go on this last question. You look at the first round rankings or the top 30, and it's littered with players from the OHL, particularly the London Knights. Are the London Knights becoming a sort of a NHL draft juggernaut, and not unlike various SEC football teams with the NFL, be it the Florida Gators or the Alabama Crimson Tide? Are the London Knights are they a program at another level compared to everybody else in junior hockey as it comes to developing draft eligible talent?
Well, they've got a couple factors for them, certainly. Like the SEC, when you talk about football, they keep getting the best players because they're able to recruit the best players. And I think London does the best job of doing that. Certainly when you have the best players coming in to play for your organization, at that point in time, you're going to have guys getting drafted high, and they've certainly done that. Secondly, I think they've got the best coach in major junior hockey, and maybe one of the best coaches in the world in Dale Hunter. You look at that team, and there's guys, Cliff Pooh is a great example of a player that people may have got to know at the Memorial Cup. He was drafted. Everybody was concerned that he was going to be a bust. London trades for him. At the beginning, certainly the kid, didn't live up to any of the expectations. But Dale Hunter coached that kid up, and he's a guy who's probably going to go in the first round now. So I think you've got that combination of the high-end players wanting to go up there. They're able to take the risks in the draft and be able to certainly go and get those guys, recruit them. It's a great place to play. And then once those high-end guys, the Max Jones and the Olli Levis of the world show up, they've got Dale Hunter and his staff coaching them. So they've got a real good situation, certainly a perfect storm, and I think they've created, like you say, the juggernaut that everybody else is trying to chase, but it's very difficult with that setup they've got to catch them. But certainly they've done a great job setting it all up, and Mark and Dale Hunter deserve a lot of credit.
Mark Seidel is with North American Central Scouting. He joins us to discuss the upcoming 2016 NHL Draft. Mark, really appreciate your time this morning. Great analysis as always, and keep up the great work as it comes to the NHL Draft.
Thanks, boys. I hope to see you in Buffalo, and certainly appreciate that coming off.
We'll see you then. Thanks very much, Mark.
Thanks a lot.
Let's head to break. When we come back, our unrestricted free agent of the week is Milan Lucic. We talk about him next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Here's Luke Shen. Didn't have a shooting lane. Now he tries it. Save made by London. It comes back to Muzzin again. On the board to Kopitar, high slot for Lucic, a shot, here he scores!
20 minutes past the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Milan Lucic, the subject of our UFA of the Week segment. It's brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information or to make an appointment, visit lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Lucic, a unrestricted free agent, as I mentioned, Ezzy. I think he's probably one of the bigger names behind Steven Stamkos, of course, that's going to hit the UFA market. But he's an interesting character. I mean, Lucic, of course, spent the bulk of his career with the Los Angeles Kings. He spent last season, with the Boston Bruins. Last season, he was traded to the Los Angeles Kings in a deal involving Martin Jones, who ended up, of course, in San Jose after the Bruins flipped him. You know, the prototypical power forward, I would suggest. But Milan Lucic is a guy who's coming off of a three-year, $18 million contract. He's getting up there. He's going to be, he just turned 28 years of age earlier this week. Happy birthday, Milan. This is a guy who I don't know that he's going to match another 3 years and $18 million, the $6 million a year salary in the unrestricted free agent market. He's a guy who had 55 points this year for the Los Angeles Kings. His career high is 62 points, and that came back in 2010-2011 with the Bruins. You know, there's a lot of talk that he's going to go west, maybe back home to Vancouver, maybe Edmonton, where there's the ties to Peter Chiarelli. How much would you give Milan Lucic on the open market, a guy who isn't dynamic offensively and plays a very sort of hard style of game that might be catching up to him a little bit?
He had 55 points last year, Drew. So, I mean, for all the talk of Milan Lucic and the fact that he's a power forward, the guy can put the puck in the net and he can also set up plays. This past year, he played most of the year alongside Andrei Kopitar on the top line of the LA Kings. I mean, when you're talking about how much he could possibly make, Drew, I think at the very least, you're probably talking about a $5 million forward. At 28 years old, is the style of play that he plays, is that going to wear him down a little bit as he gets older? Possibly. But I still think that a player like him, a team is acquiring a goal scorer more so than a power forward. Yes, I'm not saying that he isn't a power forward. I'm just saying that you're penciling him in on one of your top two lines as a guy who can give you 20, 25 goals. He scored 30 goals before with the Boston Bruins. Now, is he ever going to put up 30 goals and 62 points again? Well, it depends what kind of situation he's in, right?
Sure.
If you put him with Connor McDavid, he could probably score 30 goals and 70 points. If he's not playing with a top player, maybe he struggles a little bit. But I certainly think that Milan Lucic is the type of guy that can offer you 50 to 60 points for the next three to 5 years, maybe. Who knows, maybe longer. To me, players like him are so valuable. He's not the best skater, but a guy like Milan Lucic is a very smart hockey player, and you can put him on the power play. You can put him in front of the net. He can set things up on the power play. He can play penalty kill, even though it's not really his forte, but he's the type of player that is very versatile. Like, if a team acquires him, Drew, you're probably going to have him on your second line, maybe first line, but he's the type of guy that if you need to, you can put him on your third line, and he can play a checking role, even though that's not really, you know, what you ideally want him to be doing. But he's the type of guy, now he's a veteran in the NHL. He's not, when Boston won the Stanley Cup back in 2011, Milan Lucic was a young player, right? Like 23 years old, mm-hmm. and all that, and all the problems that he had off the ice. That's behind him. Like, this is a guy now that has shown, in my opinion, after having a bit of a down year in his last year in Boston where he scored 18 goals and 44 points, which isn't that bad. I look at Milan Lucic and I say, I would acquire him in a second, regardless of which team you're talking about. So the Vancouver Canucks obviously are going to have the cap room, Drew, mm-hmm. and they need to sign someone to play in their top six. But I would imagine Milan Lucic is probably going to get 4 or 5 years at $5 million a year. That's what I would guess that he's a player like him is going to get. And you might say that's a little bit of an overpay, but I don't think it is. Look at how the LA Kings played this year, and obviously they lost in the first round to the San Jose Sharks. But at times, Milan Lucic was their second or third best forward. I think after Andrei Kopitar and Jeff Carter and Tyler Toffoli, he was right in there, right? So I think there's going to be many teams that are after Milan Lucic, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you mentioned a team like Edmonton. I think they're going to have to move some players out, and I think they're still going to try to acquire a defenseman. So I don't know if a player like Milan Lucic is going to be priority number one.
Does he make sense to you on Edmonton? I mean, people say, well, Chiarelli, and so that makes sense, and they need to be bigger, and he's certainly big. I mean, is he the kind? And, you know, he does have a history of winning, which we know that the Edmonton Oilers would desperately need.
You know who Milan Lucic makes sense for, in my opinion, is the Montreal Canadiens.
Sure.
The Montreal Canadiens were having trouble scoring goals last year. They're a smaller team with, you know, guys like Plekanec and David Desharnais, guys like that up the middle. They lack physicality, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at times, you know, we know that the Western Conference is considered to be a more physical conference. But for me, Milan Lucic would make a lot of sense in Montreal. He wouldn't make a lot of sense in Vancouver, being from Vancouver.
Yeah, he did have a, I mean, he's always had a bit of a rocky relationship with his hometown.
Well, what about if Milan Lucic played for Montreal and the fact that now he'd be playing against Boston? I mean, Montreal fans would love that, wouldn't they?
They would certainly add another element to the rivalry. But, I mean, Lucic and, you know, and Vancouver, there's been... There's always the animosity about what happened in the Boston-Vancouver Stanley Cup final. There was, I believe, there was an incident at a bar that was captured on video where he was not in the wrong. Let me put that, make that perfectly clear, that he was treated, let's say, unfavorably by somebody in his hometown. I think that's the nicest way I can put it. So I don't know that there's any love lost necessarily between. If I recall correctly, didn't he come out with a statement saying he wasn't going to be able to return to Vancouver in the off season anymore?
It was a bizarre situation, Drew. Yeah. That was, I think, 4 years ago now.
Was it that long ago? Jeez.
Or at least 2 or 3 years ago. And I think that's behind him. And again, we don't know if he's going to ultimately sign with the Vancouver Canucks, because I think he's going to have many suitors. But certainly Milan Lucic is a guy that has proven that he's still playing at a top level, in my opinion. I mean, you watched the LA Kings come into Winnipeg this year, and I realized that the Jets beat the LA Kings when they were in town, but sure. Milan Lucic was still one of their top forwards, in my opinion. He can play in a variety of different situations, a variety of roles. And again, he's more of a slower guy, right?
But the league is sort of moving away from those guys to some extent, with the exception of a couple teams like St. Louis and Columbus. The league is moving more to a fleet of foot league, I guess LA too, for that matter. The Kings would probably love to keep Milan Lucic. They have they're in salary cap hell, though, as they have been for many a year at this point. But, you know, you're talking about a guy, you know, to your point, not the fastest guy in the league. Almost going to be 29, going to be 30, going to be 31, going to be 32 if he's looking for a 4 or 5 year deal.
Yep.
You know, if the league is moving away from his style, I wonder how much that might sort of eliminate some of the suitors from being interested in him.
Yeah, it's a good question, and that's something that is brought up on a yearly basis, right? Especially sure. with a team like Pittsburgh, who acquired guys like Carl Hagelin and Nick Bonino, speedy guys.
But play fast.
It's not like Milan Lucic can't keep up. I mean, this guy's scored 20 goals 5 times in his career.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a guy who can still keep up with the best of the best. You're talking about Andrei Kopitar and Marian Gabrick, who were his teammates, line mates.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not like Milan Lucic is you know, John Scott out there.
No, he's certainly
not. I mean,
he can
still keep up. So I think, you know, when you're talking about, you know, what type of contract he's going to get, I truly believe he can get a 4 or 5 year contract easily, maybe even more. Maybe he gets a 6 year contract from a team. And just throwing out another team who has a couple of UFAs coming up. New York Islanders are going to most likely lose Kyle Okposo.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about Milan Lucic, he's a very similar type of player, power forward, a shooter, a guy that can score, but he's also, you know, he can set up plays as well. You know, New York Islanders, I'm sure, are calling Milan Lucic his agent.
He'd look good on the wing next to Tavares, is what you're saying.
Yeah, Lucic and Tavares, that doesn't look like a bad combination to me.
It's sort of unfortunate, you know, from both the Kings' perspective and probably from the and from Milan Lucic's perspective, in that the Kings might be the team that's best suited for him style-wise. And given their salary cap troubles, unless they really move some things around, it seems unlikely that they would be heavily in the negotiations for him.
Right, but you know, Drew, people like to talk about how certain teams play a certain style and those players fitting into that type of style. But I mean, all teams are going to play with speed. Some teams are faster than other teams, but even if you're a team that plays with speed, like a Nashville, I mean, like James Neal is not the fastest player, and you have faster guys on that team, but he's the type of player that he fits in because they need a bigger body, a sniper, right? Mm-hmm. So even in a team like a St. Louis, who has obviously got their own contract problems, right? They're going to lose David Backes most likely, and they're going to lose Troy Brouwer. But a player like Milan Lucic on St. Louis, to me, makes a lot of sense.
We will see coming up. July 1st is not too far away. Milan Lucic, where does he end up? Let's head to break. When we come back, Hockey Hall of Fame journalist Al Strachan joins us to discuss the life and times, the legacy of Mr. Hockey, Gordie Howe. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.